Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Everybody, welcome to The Athletic Support, once again, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens by TheAthletic.com on this Monday, December 5th. I am Marc-Antoine Godin, alongside Arpin Big Deal Basu. Hello, Arpin.
Oh, hello, Marc-Antoine. Yeah.
Hey, man.
Anyhow, that's a joke related to our pre-podcast banter, which one day we will put out some of our pre-podcast banter maybe as a bonus episode, just because we have fun. We have so much fun at the Athletic Support Podcast that sometimes it's difficult to get started. So today was another case, but hello from lovely Vancouver. I'm looking out at the beautiful Rocky Mountains from my hotel room. The Canadiens are going to be facing the Vancouver Canucks tonight, the Seattle Kraken tomorrow, coming off a split in Alberta, a highly entertaining game on Saturday, and a loss to Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and the rest of the team known as the Oilers. And so, we thought we would kind of tee up really more so the game on Tuesday in Seattle, just because of the sort of delicious nature of the matchup. Obviously, there's a bit of a Shane Wright situation in Seattle. Juraj Slafkovský here. World Juniors are coming up. So we'll start there and move on to a couple of other topics later on, including talking a little bit about Kirby Dach later in the show in response to a voicemail that we got this week. So let's start things off with the Seattle Kraken. And so from afar, you know, watching how Shane Wright's been handled in Seattle, I'm not of the mind. You see, this is, again, is very similar to kind of some of the reaction about Juraj Slafkovský. And so it's hard. You know, when you saw Shane Wright not playing, and when he did play, getting just a few minutes, you know, it's difficult from the outside not to get the sense that, geez, they're really ruining this kid right now. But it's never that black and white. But how... what's been your reaction to what's been going on with Shane Wright in Seattle so far?
Well, I think that I'm surprised that he stayed with the team and played so little. I'm just seeing things through the Montreal Canadiens lens and the way that they approach things. But I suppose that the Seattle Kraken, are big on development too, and they want what's best for Shane Wright. But when you have such a big prospect on your team and he plays so little and he's scratched and you have to send him down to the American League on a conditioning loan, it's, you wonder if it's best for his development. But at the same time, he's around that team, and that team right now is winning. So I think that there's something to be said about you know, the collective result of a team, and they're probably that they consider that their process right now and their results are both going in the right direction. So in the meantime, it's just a matter of managing how they're going to deal with this kid within a structure that's working for them right now. So I'm a little bit surprised, honestly, but what's the alternative? I mean, he cannot be sent down to the American League for the whole season, obviously, since he's only 18 and he's Canadian. His rights belong to the Canadian League if he's not in the NHL. And returning him to the junior ranks, which is not out of the question at some point in the season, if you have to put it in the balance, well, is he going to go back in juniors where he's got a finite amount of things that he can learn at that level, or stay with the team and not be asked to be necessarily a big contributor, but just soak it in, be a sponge, and understand the daily life in the NHL. They opted to go with the latter, and I'm okay with that. But when you have a player who's lost a complete season 2 years ago because of the pandemic, and was under intense scrutiny last year in his draft year, now he hasn't played a ton of hockey these last couple of years, so I just wish for his own sake that at some point he's going to start playing a little bit more. And he's just been recalled by the Seattle Kraken, so he's going to face the Montreal Canadiens more likely than not. So it remains to be seen at this point what he's going to do. But the other fact is that the Seattle Kraken will have to make a decision on the World Juniors at some point.
Yeah, I think that's going to be some point soon. If I'm not mistaken, Canada's World Junior Camp begins this week. So, you know, it's possible. It starts on December 9th, so at the end of this week. So it is possible that, you know, Ron Francis was on our colleague Pierre LeBrun and Ryan Rashog's podcast last week, the general manager of the Kraken, I should specify. But he was saying that when they call Shane Wright back from this conditioning stint, that he will get in the lineup. They will try to get him more minutes. But the overarching sense right now is that he will be released to play for Canada at the World Junior Championships, and you know, ostensibly be their top player, you would think. I mean, and, you know, obviously Connor Bedard is there, but will play a big role on that team and get a chance to be in a temporary environment where he's with his peers, feel good about himself, play in a major event, and then presumably come back to the team. But, you know, as this pertains to the Canadians, obviously there was a strong contingent of people who wanted the Canadians to take Shane Wright, and nothing that's happened so far has made that decision or has determined if that was the right decision or not to take Juraj Slafkovský over Wright or anyone else that was taken in that draft, Logan Cooley, Simon Nemitz, whoever. So, but it is an interesting contrast in the sense that, you know, a lot of Canadiens fans have been concerned with Juraj Slafkovský playing on the fourth line for much of the season, even though a plan was pretty clearly drawn out where they're going to give him little bits, a little bit more as he earns it. Juraj Slafkovský has no problem with it. In fact, he's ecstatic about what's going on. But we're starting to see that little bit more come now. Obviously, injuries have played a part of it. Mike Hoffman not being available at first, now Brendan Gallagher out. Spots have opened up the lineup. And now when, you know, Martin St. Louis or any NHL coach hates having numbers on their lines, but the fact is every single NHL coach writes their lines on a board in the dressing room in a certain order, and it's not a random order. And so right now, the line that comes second on Martin St. Louis' board has Juraj Slafkovský on it. And so it's funny, after the game in Calgary, the first game he played with Monahan, who was kind of the star of the night, Sean Monahan, I went up to him and I was like, so how'd you like the lineup board tonight? And he just looked at him. I was like, and he just looked at me, even a little smile. I was like, top six, eh? He's like, top six. I loved it. like, you know, so this is something, you know, these are things that he want. Like when he's on the power play, whether he's on the first unit, second unit, whether he gets 15 seconds, 2 minutes, doesn't matter. He likes being on the power play. He has joked in the past that, you know, he sleeps better during the day. His pregame nap goes better when he's on the power play. And this is another thing that this is another goal he set for himself, was to get onto this team's top six. It might be temporary, but these little moments, like he had on Thursday night where he played a hell of a game, you know, Martin St. Louis on Saturday morning talked again, made the reference. He got on base every shift. We didn't mention that in our Martyisms, eh?
That's becoming a big one for him.
Yeah. We should have mentioned that in our Martyisms, but he only says it referring to him. I haven't heard him say it in reference to anyone else. Anyhow. But he did say that Thursday was another one of those games where Yuri Slavkovsky got on base every shift. He had a strong puck possession game in that game. And that's the type of game that Marty wants him to play. So, you know, I don't know if Shane Wright or Yuri Slavkovsky will wind up being the better player. But in terms of development, I got to say, like, the Canadiens' approach here, and they have the luxury, it should be noted, because as you said, Seattle's winning. They're a winning team, and they're now positioning themselves to perhaps make the playoffs. And so they don't have the luxury of playing a Shane Wright just to develop him when you have the expectation of making the playoffs. The Canadiens, I'm not saying the Canadiens players and coaching staff don't have that same expectation, but it's definitely not at the same level. Like when you have management say this is a development year, and development will be the priority over results, well, that allows you to play your top draft pick and develop him in the NHL, whereas maybe Seattle doesn't have that same luxury.
No, but I must remind our listeners, though, that the Kraken won only one of their first seven games at the beginning of the season. So, and even back then, Wright hardly saw the ice. So it was not back then. It was not necessarily a matter of, you know, keeping a winning combination, a winning formula, and too bad for the kid. And I'm not saying too bad for the kid as if that's what's going on over there. I'm not too privy to their line of thinking exactly when it comes to Wright, but it's an interesting development. And I can speak more about the way the Canadiens have approached it with Slavkovsky, and you mentioned injuries. I know that for Kent Hughes, injuries are so expected that to a certain extent you let fate take care of things and say, well, since injuries are necessarily bound to happen, it's going to, over the course of the season, opportunities will present themselves to various players just because of injuries. So let's see how things, you know, unfold. And that's basically what happened with Slavkovsky. So even if he was biding his time on the fourth line, eventually an opening would come up. And now for him, it's a matter of seizing the opportunity. But I want to emphasize that in both cases, it's the lack of pressure that's being put on those top prospects. And that's rather new. Because for quite a while, the big, you know, the top prospects, the 18-year-olds that would enter the league, you would expect them to take the league by storm and be immediate contributors. And I don't know if it's just a matter of that draft being rather poor, and you don't necessarily have like franchise players in that lot, neither is Slavkovsky or Wright. But those two teams have taken the same approach in that sense. And I think that it's wise to do that, because they keep saying how it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. Well, they're definitely taking it as a marathon with those two players, each in their own way. And I think that if I was in Slavkovsky's shoes, I would be very happy to have the ice time that I've got instead of Shane Wright's ice time. But there's not too much pressure or not too high expectations put on those guys. And Slavkovsky, as you mentioned it, take it so easily. He's so happy with what he's given. There's no frustration at all. The only frustration comes sometimes from the fan base.
Yeah, and but the other difference I think that's important to note is that Seattle is already incorporating a rookie at center on their team in Matty Beniers. And so
yeah.
to have two rookies, one of whom is 18 years old, to have two out of your four centers be rookies is kind of the same discussion as the Canadians had when having four rookies on their defense kind of thing.
It's, good point.
It's not as easy for them to incorporate right when they're already incorporating Matty Beniers, who's having a great rookie season and in many eyes is the front runner for the Calder Trophy at this point. So, so that's another thing. But anyhow, I think this road trip is, you know, we'll see what happens tonight in Vancouver and tomorrow in Seattle. But so far on this road trip, Juraj Slafkovský has taken a step, you know, and so it's really and as you mentioned, because of the inevitability of injuries, was given more responsibility. But the important thing is that he's taken that responsibility and still played within himself, like has not gone out and tried to do too much. But we've seen little flashes of confidence showing and his hands starting to show, you know, and so that's what's important is that he slowly starts to incorporate his high-end skill into the game he's playing now, which I think is trying to be more of a responsible NHL player and you know, playing the game quote unquote the right way and all that stuff is I think as he gains confidence, we're going to start to see a bit more flashes of the hands that made him a number one pick and the shot that made him a number one pick. So we'll see how that goes.
You mentioned Shane Wright likely going to the World Juniors. We haven't heard much about the possibility of Slafkovský joining the Slovakian team. Would there be any merit, do you think, in sending Slafkovský to the World Juniors?
I personally don't. I mean, I shouldn't say that. Yes, of course there's merit to sending him to the World Juniors because it's a great experience. And I think, you know, young players do benefit from that experience if it goes well. You know, there have been times where players have been released to go to the World Juniors and it didn't go well. And the expectations on NHL players to get released for that tournament are through the roof. In Canada's case, they could sometimes be crushing, like in the sense that you're expected to dominate, or like what happened to Kirby Dach, you could go there and get injured, but you can get injured anywhere. But I mean, in Kirby Dach's case, getting released for the World Juniors really did not go well at all. So, I mean, there are circumstances under which it could not be beneficial, but I just feel that him continuing to play in the NHL is more beneficial than the possible benefits you would get from playing for Slovakia in the World Juniors.
Yeah, especially in the current circumstances where he's playing on the second line. So
yeah, there, exactly.
You know, just right now, what's going on right now to this day is I mean, he's been waiting for an opportunity of that sort. You're not going to take it away from him just to say, oh, go and play with some 18 and 19 year olds of your own country, be the star player for a team that likely won't win. And coming back and see us in 3 weeks or a month from now. I don't see that happening at all.
I don't see it either. I'd be very shocked. And plus, you know, when you're talking about development, like to have him leave the team when it's about to go through probably its most difficult stretch of the season, and just in terms of travel, how many road games they're playing, the holiday swing through Florida is always difficult. You know, there's a lot of things happening that he can learn from. That's another factor, I think, in my opinion. Hey, listen, let's just kind of, I guess, switch gears. There's no easy way to segue into this, but you know, Carey Price was in the news this week.
No kidding. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, we thought we would talk about it without going too in depth on it, but you know, why don't you just kind of summarize what happened and then we could kind of dive into it.
So Carey Price has been trending on Twitter since, I guess, the beginning of the weekend. And last time I checked this morning, he was still trending at the Canadian level. At the center of this controversy is an Instagram post where he takes position in favor or in support of the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights, in denouncing the changes that the Liberal government is undertaking to Bill C-21 regarding firearms restrictions. So there's this new long list of firearms that are being added to a national ban under this amendment to the law, and some of which, according to that coalition, the CCFR, are actually hunting rifles. So in his Instagram post, Price wrote, "I love my family, I love my country, and I care for my neighbor. I am not a criminal or a threat to society. What Justin Trudeau is trying to do is unjust. I support the CCFR to keeping my hunting tools. Thank you for listening to my opinion." Now, Carey Price doesn't express himself publicly very often, so that that makes it even more eventful in a sense, and in this case, controversial, right? Gun rights are a big topic, obviously, not only in the USA, but in certain parts of Canada, like Alberta or BC, where Carey Price is from, and also among the First Nation communities, where hunting is a significant part of their heritage. But it was a slippery slope to enter that debate and, you know, come back from his hiding to express himself on that. But I'd be curious, what has struck you, Arpin, in the uproar surrounding that?
Well, you know, I think what's important here is, you know, I have my thoughts on firearms and guns and what have you, and they're based on a reality that's completely different from Carey Price's reality. And really the last line in that Instagram post is what's worth remembering. Thank you for listening to my opinion. You know, this is Carey Price's opinion. And I understand that this comes with the territory when you play in the NHL, when you're, you know, I think at this point you could say like an iconic member of the Canadiens franchise, someone who kind of defined a generation of Canadiens hockey. And you decide to put yourself out there the way he did, you're going to open yourself to this. And I think he knew that. He understands that. That's how strongly he felt about it. I mean, if you recall, when I spoke to Carey Price prior to the season about how his knee was doing and all sorts of other things, the story that came out in our NHL 99 project, he was parked on the side of the road by the end of that conversation, waiting to go hunt. He was going out to someone's farm in Granby to go hunting. That's what he does. It's something that he enjoys doing. So for him to have this opinion is not surprising in the least and should not really surprise anyone. And no one should be outraged by it because he's been very transparent on his thoughts on hunting. He's talked about it many times, how much he enjoys hunting. Now, you can disagree with that. I personally disagree with that. I've never hunted and I probably wouldn't do it, but I'm not going to disagree with it. And as you mentioned, hunting is not only something he enjoys doing, it's something that's up, that he feels is a part of who he is and who his people are. And he sees it as an ancestral right, which it is really when you talk about First Nations people, and their history of hunting to live, you know, and so, but that's what it says more. I think this whole thing, what it says is kind of our relationship with celebrity and really the media's kind of relationship with celebrity and the media's relationship or traditional media's relationship with social media and how, you know, the fact that Cole Caulfield liked the post became news. And all he did was hit like. Like, all we're doing, like, yeah. Who knows? You know, he might just be hitting like because his friend said something and he wants to support him. You know, it's like, this is where
you become guilty by association. You know?
Guilty, guilty by like.
Yeah.
It's gotten too much. Like, I don't know. It's not, you know.
But you remember, Sorry, go ahead. I'll let you finish your talk.
Well, I appreciate everyone's right to an opinion. So I appreciate his. I appreciate the people who don't agree with his. And I think he put himself out there. And so he has to kind of take some of the heat that comes with it. And I think he knew that. But at a certain point, you know, in a society, can we not have debate? Like, is debate, it seems to have gone, or healthy debate or constructive debate seems to have gone out the window these days, I feel.
Yeah, that's my main thing with that, is that that's the one thing of note that I've seen, not only on this particular issue, but we see that more and more in society, is that we have very little tolerance for point of views that are different to ours. And so I'm with you. I'm a proponent of gun restrictions. I would like to see less of it. But there are people who are in different situations. Carey Price, you know, you're mentioning the fact that, you know, as a hunting is part of his heritage. You know, remember back in 2012, there was this big controversy when there was he put on Instagram a picture of him who had just shot a coyote, and so he had a coyote bagged in the back of a pickup truck, and here he was with a friend and the gun and all that. And in a Twitter post afterwards, he explained that coyote hunting is a necessity in order to maintain population. Too many coyotes equals fewer game animals equals no meat for my family. So no meat for my family, that's a different reality for Carey Price than for me. Meat for my family just means going to the supermarket. For Carey Price in Williams Lake, it's totally different. So, and you have to respect that. So I think that in this case, what was touchy and was probably, and I was mentioning the fact that guilty by association, is that the CCFR has been in the news only recently for the fact that they had their online shop, they had a discount, like they offered 10% off for customers who used the code POLY at checkout. So POLY, POLY, which is a reference to Polytechnique, and obviously the 33rd anniversary of the shooting in Montreal is tomorrow. It's not great. It's not the best. Now, is Carey Price aware of that? Probably not. When he associates himself to a group like that, then it becomes that's where I guess it goes beyond just him expressing himself. It's him associating himself with a group that it's probably, you know, their judgment sometimes can be impaired. So I would, that's the only thing that I regret. For the rest, I mean, is if he expresses his hope that the Canadian government is going to be able to protect his right to own a hunting rifle, that's perfectly his right, and he's okay to doing that.
Yeah, that's it. So that's that. I mean, it's far more nuanced and you know, everything that surrounded that Instagram post. And again, we're talking about an Instagram post.
But you know what? CCFR Facebook page, now they've got their hashtag I'm with Carey going on.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, so no. I get it. And again, guilt by association. But, you know, I think the point being, you know, you could find it repugnant that they use the poly, which I do.
It is.
And it is. But it's, you know, again, like this is what I kind of felt with the, you know, the fact that Cole Caulfield liked the post as being news. It was in the news report. It was in the write-up. Mm-hmm. And I can guarantee you Cole Caulfield has never heard of that coalition. Has no idea what they had. And it didn't care. I mean, honestly, like, I think he just saw his teammate making a stand on something and decided to support him. And did, without knowing all the nuance and the details of it. But anyhow, point being, just think everyone has a right to their opinion, and we shouldn't all freak out when someone expresses it, because we should be encouraging that. We should be encouraging the free flow of opinion and ideas and debate, and you can disagree with it, but the freak out's a bit too much.
Yeah, and just to close on that, and I never expected that we would talk about guns on this show, but anyway, the public safety minister, Marco Mendicino, said a few days ago, the government has no intention whatsoever to go after long guns and hunting rifles. This is simply conservative fear-mongering. So, depends on which side of the fence you are on that issue. I haven't read the bill. I have no intention of doing so. But if people are allowed to their opinions, we just hope that in every case, those are informed opinions. That's the most that we can hope.
Yeah.
Now, back to hockey.
Back to hockey, thankfully.
Back to hockey with a question from one of our listeners. We've got Dave Cunningham, who left us this message. Let's hear his question.
Hi, my name is Dave Cunningham, long-time listener, first-time caller. I was kind of curious. We haven't really talked about Alex Romanov in a while. Romanov, I guess I should say. I was thinking in a hypothetical world where we hadn't traded Romanov for the pick and then Doc, where would Romanov fit in the defensive scheme at the moment? How would he fit in with the current crop of defensemen? And based off of that, we're still happy with the trade. I'm very happy with the trade, but I'm kind of curious as to where, you know, how much better are we doing with Doc in the lineup than having Romanov? Thanks very much. Enjoy the show.
So thank you, Dave, for your question. And before we answer it, I just want to remind everybody that you can leave us a message on our voicemail by dialing 646-847-9404, 646-847-9404. So Arpin, where would Alexander Romanov fit among the current crop of defensemen?
Well, I think the point is, the whole point of that trade was that the Canadians had reinforcements. That's why Alexander Romanov was deemed expendable, was because Cayden Guhle was coming. To a certain extent, Arbor Jacki was coming. I mean, the first time we heard Kent Hughes mention Arbor Jacki's name was last year. He was doing a rundown of some of the top prospects, some of the guys who are on the horizon of arriving in Montreal, and he included Arbor Jacki's name on that list, which I think included Guhle and Harris, if I'm not mistaken. So that's the whole point, is that I think Romanov would have fit great with this group of defensemen. They're, as we can see already, they have a logjam on the left side as it is, forcing Guhle to move over to the right as a rookie. So because of that situation and because of the need for, you know, young, talented forwards, that trade was made. And they wind up with Kirby Dach. And so a little bit of trivia for you, Marc-Antoine. Can you tell me what province the town of Fort Saskatchewan is in?
Let me guess. It's not Saskatchewan.
It's not Saskatchewan. I feel very, very stupid when I got to Edmonton and a colleague of mine mentioned, there's another hometown guy, Kirby Dach. I'm like, what? Isn't he from Fort Saskatchewan? He's like, yeah, Fort Saskatchewan's right just past my house. It's a suburb of Edmonton. And I was like, I had no idea. Honestly, for our listeners in Alberta, I apologize. But I had no idea Fort Saskatchewan was a suburb of Edmonton. So Kirby Dach, you know, it wasn't his first game in Edmonton, but it was also a homecoming game for him. All the attention was on Cayden Guhle playing his first game as an NHL player in Edmonton. Kirby Dach was playing in his hometown as well. And so prior to the game, being a local guy, Martin St. Louis was asked about Kirby Dach, and just listen to his answer.
Well, Kirby's a special player, I think. You know, you think about the size, the brain, the skill. He's 21. We're very happy to have Kirby, and he's been a big part of our success. Great kid, very promising future.
So that's Martin St. Louis really doubling down on something that he said earlier, in the sense that when he mentioned about why the Blackhawks would give up on a 20, now he's referring to him as a special player. The brain on him, the size, the whole package as being special. Like, he's really enamored with this guy. And the one thing, once I heard that answer, I kind of, you know, because the one part of Kirby Doc's game that I find so interesting is his use of his reach. And, you know, we saw a player come through Montreal, and a player who's terrorizing the NHL right now, and Tage Thompson. And one of his greatest attributes is not only having the reach of someone who's 6 foot six, but his ability to use it, like the range with which he plays with the puck. He can play with it all the way out wide, stretched as far as he can, and he can play with it right in his feet. And that's a wide range that defenders need to defend, and he uses it to his advantage to get around guys constantly. I mean, he's the master of the, and Doc doesn't quite do that offensively, but that's what St. Louis pointed out, is that defensively, his reach is a real weapon. Like, defends with his stick a lot, and does what Martin St. Louis always talks about, is he defends as soon as he loses the puck and does not wait to get to the defensive zone to defend. And he thwarts lots of opposing teams' offenses or offense with that reach and with that stick. And so it's so interesting, I find, the degree to which Martin St. Louis' sort of rhetoric on him, or just the words he uses to describe him, are just progressively getting more and more superlative, I guess, as the season goes on. Like, he's growing in Martin St. Louis' eyes into something pretty unique as far as players around the NHL are concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. So Dave, is the team better off with Doc than in Romanov? I think that clearly the answer is yes. Not only because of, not necessarily because of Doc, but more so because of Gouley, as Arpin said. And it's interesting because when you look at Romanov's numbers with the Islanders, he's playing 19 minutes 48 on average per game. The Islanders are set up a little bit differently, and they've been for a few years now under more than one coach, because Lane Lambert is doing pretty much the same D usage than Barry Trotz used to do before. They're using five defensemen pretty much the same amount. So Romanov is a tad under 20 minutes a night, whereas Gouley plays 20-22. Romanov's on second PK unit. He's got no power play time. Gouley has seen a little bit, and we can expect that over, you know, in due time, he might end up seeing more, maybe not this season, but down the road, there's clearly untapped offensive potential there that the Canadians might benefit from. And if you look at the last game, and for a few games now, well, there's a rotation on the third pairing, but on the left side with Matheson, Edmondson, Jack Eye, and you can add Jordan Harris to that, having a left shot defenseman like Romanov was just, that was way too much. And right now, Gouley is the one that's being chosen, even though he's a lefty. He's been asked to play on the right side, has defended him quite well, despite his lack of experience on that side. But Romanov, I mean, he would have become redundant. And I mean, kudos to the Canadians for foreseeing that, because Romanov was an energetic player. He was a charismatic player, well-liked by his teammates. He was a good player in a depleted defense last season, but they could see that there was a bit of an issue there with his usage, and they probably tapped the highest value they could for his services right before he had to sign a contract extension. So Dac being there now, I mean, we'll see down the road, depending on how they're going to use him, if he's going to be switched back to center. We spoke about, Slafkovský at the beginning of the show. I mean, one day we would suppose that Slafkovský is going to earn a permanent spot on the top six, and maybe even with Cole Caulfield and Suzuki. Doc has been so far definitely the best fit with Cole and Nick. But I must mention that in the last three games, that's interesting, because the 5-on-5, the Canadiens' first line, they had 21 shots. They gave up only 11 shots. So, you know, it feels as though they had good puck possession numbers. But those of those 11 shots against, 8 of them were high danger chances. So, and the net result is that in those last 3 games, they didn't score 5-on-5, but they gave up 3. So defensively,
okay. Well, wait. There's a bit of context required there. I mean, one of those games was against Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. Like that's
I know.
I'm just putting that in there.
regarding the high danger chances against. I know, but I mean, the fact that they've the 21 shots for, even if there's a, you know, in the expected goals models, it suggests that those shots were, you know, not necessarily very dangerous. And so you can choose to go for volume, or you can choose to, you know, spare your bullets and wait for the right time to pounce and try to make a more dangerous shot. But you're right. I mean, this for sure against the Oilers, it's always tricky to come back on top.
But just one thing to add on the Romanov thing is that not only did the current management group foresee this logjam on the left side, they also recognized a team that desperately needed someone exactly like Alexander Romanov in the New York Islanders. They needed a partner for Noah Dobson to play on his left side, and they didn't have one. They didn't have an ideal one. And so it could be argued that they still don't, but I mean, I think they saw, and I think quite rightfully saw, a good meshing with Dobson's skill set to Romanov's skill set. And so, you know, I mean, the Canadians took Alexander Romanov in the second round, were quite widely criticized for it at the time as being a reach on a player that a lot of this, I guess, the public scouting community, or the, you know, sort of the draft media community, didn't know a whole lot about. They take that player, different manage group, obviously, but they take that player and turn him into the 13th overall pick in a so-so draft, and take that pick and turn him into the number 3 overall pick from a few. So if you connect the dots, Romanov being taken in the second round to the 13th overall pick to a former 3rd overall pick, in terms of asset management, like that's kind of, you know, sort of a textbook asset management situation, you would think.
Yeah, it's buy low, sell high, you know, mm-hmm. because Romanov, they sold at high value, and Doc, obviously, his stock had plummeted a little bit with the Hawks. I think obviously the Canadians still believed in him, but it's not as if they had to sell the farm in order to acquire him either. So it was a nice piece of business. And I still, to this day, I mean, we were both in the building when, because with the draft being in Montreal, but the gasp in the crowd when they announced the trade. And first, when Gary Bettman named Alexander Romanov, I could hear, ooh, there's like this roaring, this sound of consternation in the crowd, and as if, you know, they had put a sort of a dagger in their stomach. And for moments, like, ouch, this is going to hurt. Who is it for? And then you understand that it's for Kirby Doc, and then applauds. But
well, it was great. The best part of that drama is that the trade didn't leak. No. That's what made it so great. No one was on that trade at all. And so, I mean, obviously that trade's not going to leak from the Islanders. Traditionally, I mean, you were dealing with 3 of the most secretive organizations in the league, basically, which made for that dramatic moment, because not much gets out of the Blackhawks usually. Not much gets out of the Canadians usually, and nothing gets out of Lou Lamoriello. So you had the perfect storm of secrecy there, which made for that moment, which made that moment that much better in terms of drama.
Hey, speaking of former first round picks, I want to finish with Joel Armia. Joel Armia finally put points on the board over the weekend. He's been, you know, trying to find his rhythm, obviously being, as Martin Saint-Louis said, being put in the back of the bus because of his injury. It was, you know, it was tough for him to find his rhythm back. You know, and he's taken a lot of flack because of the fact that there's always this, you know, we have this thing, right, on Twitter, you and I mentioning the Armia things, and we constantly see, like, little sparks of how talented and how great he could be, and it just only equals the frustrations that we have that we don't see that more often, or that all those abilities are not, or skills, should I say, do not convert in proper offensive effectiveness and production on a more consistent basis. That being said, Joel Armia, I think at this point in his career, is who he is. And when you said about Martin Saint-Louis that he was pumping Kirby Doc's tires, he certainly is doing the same with Joel Armia, despite the lack of production.
Well, listen, you and I are on the record as having our Armia things. We are appreciators of his unique skill set, his ability to do things that very few other players can do with his combination of size and skill, puck protection, all sorts of things. You know, Joel Armia at his best is a very effective hockey player. Is never going to be the guy that everyone wants him to be. And the sooner you accept that, the sooner you can appreciate his game for what it is and not what you wish it was. But Martin Saint-Louis, before him Dominique Ducharme, before him Claude Julien, I mean, coach after coach appreciates what this guy's able to do because he plays a responsible game, he's an effective penalty killer, and he plays the type of game that Martin Saint-Louis wants more of his players to play, which is possess pucks in the offensive zone, work down there, essentially play defense with the puck by having it far away from your net, you know? So Joel Armia is really good at that, even when he's not being productive, but he does have the skills to produce. And I thought Martin Saint-Louis, you know, coming out in favor of him, mentioning how he loves the player in Edmonton on Saturday morning and how he felt, you know, he started late, missed some time because of injury, took some time, that wound up getting him, as Martin Saint-Louis put it, at the back of the bus in terms of usage among forwards with all the new players that have been added. And he felt, so Saturday morning, he was like, you know, I really feel, now he's moving up the lineup because of injuries, and he really felt that he was on the verge of bringing some production. And that very night, Armia played a great game in Edmonton on a line with Evgeny Dadonov and Christian Dvorak, and really had a great assist on Dadonov's goal. It looks like just a bad rebound, but really Armia is shooting to that pad to create that rebound. Like, that was a smart shot that resulted in Dadonov scoring. That was Armia's first point of the season. Rings went off the crossbar 5 minutes into the third period with the Canadiens down a goal on a really demoralizing goal with 4 seconds left in the second. And just did exactly what Martin Saint-Louis predicted he would do. And it's, you know, if he can consistently bring that, which he won't, let's be clear. He will go through lulls. We know this. So don't freak out when it happens, because it's just, that's who he is. But when he's good, you know, as Martin Saint-Louis likes to say, his good is really good. Problem with Armia is his bad can be really bad too.
Well, the bad is not that he's going to do crazy, stupid mistakes or that he's going to put his team in trouble. It's just that he disappears.
It's sleepy Armia.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's a lot of players that we tend to assess based also on their salary. And, oh, if you pay this guy that much, he should be giving you this or that. And I think a lot of the criticism towards Joel Armia is based on his contract and the fact that he's got 3 more years at $3.4 million, which, even though I like the player and I really like the guy,
it's too much. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's just too much money. But, and I wonder, you know, did Marc Bergevin basically pay him for what he wished his game was instead of what his game really is?
Well, he paid him based on what he watched. I mean, Joel Armia is the embodiment of Marc Bergevin's last offseason as Canadiens GM being just a total disaster. And so because all of his decisions were based on a playoff run that was rooted really in the performance of two players, both of whom will probably never play hockey again. You know, so, I mean, it really, Joel Armia being re-signed was based on how he was fantastic during that playoff run. He was so good. He was good at Joel Armia every night, like on a nightly basis. And the play of that line with Staal and Perry was just tailor-made for playoff hockey. And he was great. He showed what he can be when he's at his best. And so if you're a team who believes you're going back to the playoffs, which Marc Bergevin clearly did, and you just saw what you just saw, and you have to keep a guy from going on the unrestricted free agent market, you're going to have to overpay either in terms of salary or term. And Marc Bergevin always leaned towards term. To keep the AAV down, he always tacked an extra year onto whatever contract he signed with whatever player. So he did that with Joel Armia. And now they have that contract. And there's not a whole lot they could do about it. But he's still an effective player. You know, I mean, I think more often than not, Joel Armia helps the team he plays for more than he hurts it.
Yeah, and he's more playoff type. I think not only in the last Canadiens run, but I think generally his style of play fits more the playoffs than the regular season also. So
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. So let's call it off for right now. And thank you so much, everybody, for listening to The Athletic Support. We're going to be back on Friday with our French edition of Le Sport Athlétique. The Canadiens so have two more games out west before they return home for a Saturday tilt against the LA Kings. Anything to add, Arpin?
No. Enjoy the games this week. I'm going to enjoy my time in the Pacific time zone. And I'm going to have some coffee in Seattle tomorrow. But we'll talk to you all on Friday. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye. Athletic.